Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, and this is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, our topic, an important one, that needs to have a full airing before the entire world population. It's a vaccine special. The CDC, that is the Center for Disease Control, Dr. William Thompson, and what he had to say about corruption at the CDC, who was involved, how that corruption today has impacted countless lives, because it's been going on for a long time. And what can we make of the actual vaccine science and those who advocate that we need mandatory vaccines, and now they're pushing legislation at the federal level where 237 brand new vaccines are in the pipeline, and that there are those who will be advocating that not just children, but adults receive that. And they're now preparing the legislation coming out of the House that could lead to adults having to have mandatory vaccines without exemptions. Historically, if you wanted an exemption for religious or philosophical reasons, you could obtain it relatively easy, especially with an attorney experienced in the field. California just made that impossible. And yet, having spent more than 15,000 hours personally doing this scholarship on vaccines, I ask a basic question. Do they work? You would assume that with every agency of government, the overall umbrella agency is U.S. Public Health Service. But under the U.S. Public Health Service, you have the National Cancer Institute, the National Institute for Allergy and Infectious Disease, the National Institute on Aging, the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, and the FDA, among other agencies. With all that science, all those resources, all of the independent scientists working at universities that are funded by governmental agencies, surely it would be a no-brainer. Of course, vaccines are all safe, every single one, and they're effective, every single one. If not, then they would allow exemptions. Also, they would explain that every child, every adult, every senior citizen, every pregnant woman receiving a vaccine is protected from the conditions for which they are being vaccinated. If only were it true. When I wrote my first article challenging the safety and efficacy of vaccines, I had to go to the toxicology data, something that's been conveniently overlooked in all the debates on vaccines. I then went to the immunology data. Again, we have been told with absolute certainty that when you're vaccinated, whether it's for chickenpox or measles or hepatitis, you are then protected. Not just you specifically and exclusively, but everyone. You're all given the same dosage. You could weigh 700 pounds or you could weigh 7 ounces. You're all given the same. Now, the medical literature is filled with articles explaining why vaccines, in many cases, are contraindicated, should not be done. And yet I never have seen people go into a pharmacist to get their free flu shot or go to their pediatrician, where the pediatrician does a detailed and specific analysis to see whether or not the person is immunocompromised on any level. And yet when we have adverse effects, instead of facing the reality that historically we've had adverse effects and people could sue the vaccine manufacturers, they managed very cleverly, in a well-organized effort, to select one member, a very powerful member, of the House of Representatives to lobby on their behalf. And lo and behold, in the middle of another bill, they were indemnified, made harmless. So let me put this in just very frank terms. They cannot be sued. even if the vaccines killed every single person using them. That is how complete is their protection. We're told that if you can prove you have been vaccine injured, you go to a vaccine injury court. It's very difficult. Many people are not aware of it. And also, the idea is they exclude you if you don't report within a certain period of time, as if all vaccine adverse effects occur within a very limited framework. We know people, and it's in the scientific literature, who have not manifested symptoms that were clear enough or distinguishable enough to determine it was vaccine-related for several years. Therefore, the statute of limitations has passed, and they have no recourse. My concern is that we have had to look at the evidence and deconstruct it as best as we could. For example, when the leading promoter of vaccines in the United States, Dr. Paul Offit, a distinguished and respected scientist at the University of Pittsburgh, and the developer of the rotavirus vaccine, appears on national television, which he did numerous occasions, he is dealt with as a friend, as if he is the official word on truth. And therefore, if he says the vaccines are safe and if you don't vaccinate, you're irresponsible, or to some effect those words, then along comes leading liberal publications such as Mother Jones, The Daily Cause, The Nation magazine, and including many people on Pacifica stations, and advocating for vaccines and actually attacking people who do not. When there's an effort in California to balance the slate by presenting both sides of an argument, where only one side has been presented about 98% of the time, the official position, one of the leading historical bastions of free speech, Pacifica, and its KPFA flagship station, refuses to allow myself and Bonnie Faulkner, a highly respected journalist, to discuss the actual science of vaccines. And in specifically, I had gotten the voting record of all the members who voted for it. I then looked up the law in California that you're not allowed to advocate or lobby on behalf of anyone who's given you more than $250. I found some people receiving $1,500, $3,000, and one person had received over $490,000 from the pharmaceutical industry. And one vaccine maker, the maker of Gardasil, was the number one giver of donations to all the people who just happened to have voted on their behalf. I was going to present this as what I personally believe is a gross conflict of interest, and that I was going to ask for an investigation to see if these people indeed did break the law in California, because the same law is now being advocated 111 different times in different ways, but coming up with the same, you must get your vaccines in all 50 states. The American Legislative Council, ALEC, we didn't even know existed for 35 years. But they did. 200 to 250 major corporations would join together twice a year at exclusive resorts and sit and coach your state legislators on what they should vote on, give them bills that they would go back, and then seemingly in a bipartisan fashion pass a bill that would quickly make it through their legislatures, become the law, and in every single instance, not a single exception, the bills benefited the sponsors at the detriment of the state citizens. Only when they were exposed did we see what we knew was happening but could not prove, such as the one example. I was fighting in 22 states to prevent only registered dietitians from becoming nutritionists and giving nutrition advice. In the state of Ohio, even if you wanted to give free advice and you had a master's degree or a PhD in nutrition, you could be arrested and fined unless you were a registered dietitian. Now, as a registered dietitian and a BS in nutritional science and a PhD in human nutrition and public health science and as a professor in clinical nutrition and a research fellow at the Institute of Applied Biology for over 32 years in anti-aging medicine, I would have been one of those rare exceptions 99% of all other people advocating for nutrition who had qualifications would have been exempt, and we couldn't figure it out. It turns out it was the American Legislative Exchange Council. And that's just one example. So I'm giving you the larger overview now to show you that it's a very specific group of people, vaccine manufacturers, who are also pharmaceutical makers, who then have lobbyists, who then support think tanks, and from those think tanks go forward scientists and public health advocates, generally very articulate, well-credentialed, nice pedigrees, and they advocate for vaccines and attack people who disagree with them. There are more than 3 million American parents who have children that have been vaccine damaged, more than 1 million with autism spectrum disorder conditions. Yet to this day, the FDA, the National Institutes of Health, the CDC uniformly say there is no association between them. And there's where the argument has rested. Until a whistleblower came forward. That whistleblower is the subject of today's program. His name is Dr. William Thompson. He was a senior scientist, still is, at the CDC. And Dr. Thompson, in a series of discussions with Brian Hooker, was able to enlighten Dr. Hooker on what really goes on at the CDC and explained how some important studies that actually showed a statistically significant over 300% increase in African-American children under 36 months of age who develop autism spectrum disorder at a high percentage, this material was not acceptable because it did not match political and ideological doctrine. As a result, as Dr. Thompson says, and you're going to hear in a moment from my guest, they manipulated the data. They distorted it. They altered it. Now, altering data from a study that is financed by the federal government is unethical. Our guest will tell us whether or not it's illegal, Professor Mary Holland, in a moment. But this went on for some time. At the very same time, in another part of the world, in the United Kingdom, a very courageous group of scientists were determining whether or not the parents who claimed that their children were normal until they got the MMR vaccine, the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, and then they developed all forms of irritabilities, including inflammation in their guts. At that time, Andrew Wakefield was pro-vaccine, as were all the members of that team at the Royal Free Hospital. They did an examination. At no time did they declare that there was an association between the vaccine and autism. In fact, in an article published in the British medical journal The Lancet, all they could do is suggest that more research was necessary because there were inflammatory problems and mitochondrial problems. For that very cautious and very conservative statement, they were set upon, attacked by Rupert Murdoch's Times of London, and a person who I debated for an hour on this program, Brian Deer. Dr. Wakefield lost his license. He was excoriated. He was absolutely brutally treated by Dr. Gupta, also on CNN, by Anderson Cooper, and the world media ganged on. Dr. Wakefield's work, had it been acknowledged by Dr. Thompson at the time, would have completely exonerated him. He did not. In my personal opinion, Dr. Thompson is a coward, and his apology is a little late after having seen so much damage to the children, to the parents of the children, and to the reputations of those who were looking for the truth. That's my personal opinion, which I'm entitled to. And the fact that he's a whistleblower today does not expunge from the record what he did and participated in this. Now let's go to my panelists. You should have a good understanding of what we're trying to do. My first guest is Kevin Berry. Kevin is a former federal attorney and in civil law and currently the co-president of the Elizabeth Burt Center for Autism Law and Advocacy and president of First Freedoms, a nonprofit organization dedicated to advancing the freedoms guaranteed by the Constitution's First Amendment. Earlier, he was the president of Jenny McCarthy's organization, Generation Rescue. He has three sons, one with autism spectrum disorder. He is also the author of a brand new book, just released, Vaccine Whistleblower, Exposing Autism Research Fraud at the CDC, with a preface by Boyd Haley and a foreword by Robert Kennedy Jr., which was the first time provides transcripts and conversations between the CDC scientist and whistleblower William Thompson and Professor Brian Hooker. Now, he will be joined in a moment by Professor Mary Holland. Professor Holland is the director of the Graduate Legal Skills Program at New York University School of Law, specializing in international human rights and public law in vaccine safety law and injury compensation. She also has a son who regressed into autism following the MMR vaccine. She has degrees in Russian studies from Harvard, a graduate degree in international relations, and a JD degree from Columbia University, where she also taught international law at its law school. She is a co-author of Vaccine Epidemic, How Corporate Greed Blessed Bioscience and Coercion Threatens Our Human Rights. Her website is vaccineepidemic.com, and they will be joined later in the program by Dr. Robert Sears. He is a board-certified pediatrician who is pioneering the integration of alternative natural medicine practices with the traditional medical care in pediatric prevention and therapeutic health. He is the co-author of the Sears Parenting Library series, which includes volumes about raising children naturally and organically. He is also co-founder of the Immunity Education Group, a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing complete and balanced information about infectious diseases and the risks and benefits of vaccines. He's an active participant in efforts opposing the state of California's vaccine mandated bills, and he is here. His websites are immunityed.org and askdrsears.com. I welcome you all to the program. Let's begin with you, Kevin. Kevin, when you were on the program yesterday, you didn't have a chance to touch on other questions I had for you. One surprising fact in the discussions between CDC whistleblower Dr. Thompson and independent researcher Professor Brian Hooker is that Dr. Thompson coached Hooker about what the anti-vaccine movement needs to do to bring greater public attention to the dangers of vaccines and their association with autism and other neurological disorders. Now, we have focused on the autism argument, and of course, there is a good peer-reviewed scientific evidence showing an association between vaccines, dimerosal, mercury, and autism. However, the government and the medical industrial complex have done a rather excellent job in closing the door on this association in order to prevent further scrutiny and investigation and certainly open debate. Even if the CDC's body of research is seriously flawed and corrupt, and even nonsensical in some instances, such as some of the 14 studies they continuously tout in their research arsenal, it has still become an impenetrable wall that the major media and professional medical associations and pediatricians won't cross. We hear from Offit, the CDC, and the entire medical industrial over and over again that the matter is closed. So Dr. Thompson encourages several times in the transcripts that the association between vaccine and ticks are the real smoking gun, and that the anti-vaccine advocates need to focus on that. So first, I'd like you to share your opinion about Dr. Thompson's coaching about autism controversy specifically, and why is he suggesting this course of action? And then, Dr. Sears, would you please follow up after Kevin with explaining to us what neurological tics, that's T-I-C-S, are, how they manifest, what is their etiology, and how are they observed in children and people with autism? And also, what is the association between tics and autism? And finally, what other ways are these tics observable that can be traced back to vaccines? So, Kevin, let's begin with you and take your time to share the most damaging statements from Dr. Thompson to Brian Hooker about the CDC and its environment of incompetence, corruption, and cover-up.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Null. That was an excellent summary of the issues. I thought it was very interesting when Dr. Thompson was advising Dr. Hooker to focus on the ticks issue. It seemed like what Dr. Thompson was trying to say is ticks is enough. You know, that that perhaps it is causing greater neurological damage, but those associations would be harder to prove, and that in numerous studies that Dr. Thompson was part of, he thought that that the tics was a very unassailable argument. And so if you're trying to remove thimerosal, that's the goal, is to remove the mercury-containing preservative from all vaccines in this country and internationally, that all you need is tics. You don't have to go further. And one of his quotes was, do you think a pregnant mother would give a child a vaccine they thought caused tics? You know, that's a direct quote from him. And I think that was what he was saying, is that we're almost we're swinging for the fences. We're trying to hit a grand slam, and all we need to do is hit a single up the middle. And that's, I think that's the essence of his argument, is just, you know, you can get thimerosal out of vaccines if you just focus on tics. So I don't think he's saying that. And then he later goes on and says that's almost like it, then you have to take a small leap, because tics are five times more prevalent in people with autism, that then you can say that tics are that vaccines cause autism-like symptoms because tics is more prevalent with people with autism. So he's not dismissing the autism connection completely, as I read the transcript. But he's saying that if your advocacy goal is to remove thimerosal from vaccines, that to focus on tics, and it's interesting.
Could you please go forward before we go to Dr. Sears to explain more on tics, and lay out and quote verbatim the most important statements that Thompson made to Brian Hooker?
Yeah, here's what I think the most important statement is, and it's in his whistleblower attorney's letter. He says this. He says, I will do everything I can to assist any unbiased and objective scientists inside or outside the CDC to analyze data collected by the CDC or other organizations for the purpose of understanding whether vaccines are associated with an increased risk of autism. There are still more questions than answers, and I appreciate that so many families are looking for answers from the scientific community. Now, to me, that's a bombshell, because like it's in back-to-back sentences. He's saying that it's an open question whether or not there's an increase, whether or not vaccines are associated with an increased risk of autism, and that there's still more questions than answers. That's directly refutes the talking point that's been coming out for more than a decade, that the question's been asked and answered, it's over, and this is not a parent saying this. This is not a pediatrician with suspicions saying this. This is the lead author of the thimerosal safety studies. This is a named author on the MMR studies. The only vaccine research ever done, safety research ever done by the CDC, by the government, only looked at one vaccine and one vaccine component, MMR and thimerosal. Dr. Thompson was an author on both, and he says neither of them hold water. That's enormous. So that's in his lawyer statement. Other statements that he makes that are very damning, he says the CDC set the research back 10 years. So he's saying that the research that they compiled like between 2000 and 2004, which led to the May 2004 Institute of Medicine report, which said that spending additional resources on vaccine-related research as it relates to autism is not a good use of scarce resources. That's the 10 years he's saying that the CDC set the research behind. He says that's 2004 to 2014. He also says within the CDC that autism is a hot potato. It's a political hot potato. So it's not science. I'm sure there are people in there who really do want to get the answers, but because it's a political hot potato, that the CDC is paralyzed. He says that the CDC is paralyzed by anything related to autism, and that all research is coming to a grinding halt. So I think those are some of the most interesting ones. And well, when Dr. Sears is explaining the tics, I'll thumb through the book and find some other doozies.
Okay, one last question before we go to Dr. Sears. Could you explain to the audience what happened recently when it was reported from Dr. Thompson and these dialogues that a group of scientists at the CDC who had worked on those studies got together with garbage bags to confiscate all the material and destroy it?
Yeah, so that was a revelation that, Congressman Posey read on the House floor on June 29th. It's on YouTube. You can see it from C-SPAN. It's a statement that Dr. Thompson apparently gave to Congressman Posey or one of Posey's staff members that he was reading from. That statement is not in the transcripts that I received that are in this book. But he says they scheduled a meeting, and they were literally taking the data and throwing it in a garbage can, like old-fashioned style, you know. And the good news, first of all, scheduling a meeting to discard data, there's five co-authors on that paper, and I guess they just always all relied that all five of them would not break their vow of omerta and just tell anyone that what they did. And that this is one thing where I'm... Yeah, I know. I heard your opinion earlier about Dr. Thompson being a coward. I respectfully disagree. That to me, that he came forward now at all is an extremely courageous thing to do. So I understand what you're saying, and I understand not everyone will agree with my opinion, but I think it's very courageous what he's doing, and I hope he continues.
I do too. But for 10 years, he was not courageous. And a lot of lives were impacted. But I understand what you're saying. Let me quote something from your transcript of Dr. Thompson, quote, "But I also have to say these drug companies and their promoters, they're making such a big deal of these measles outbreaks, and they know they're making a big deal that polio is coming back, and polio comes back all the time in third world countries. It's like a never-ending thing where the press loves to hype it, and it scares people."
That's right. That was in May 2014. That virtually predicted exactly what they did with the Disneyland measles outbreak, which only it was about 130 people came down with measles. No one died. I believe the statistics were you're about five times more likely to be hit by lightning than get measles, even in California. But they love to hype and scare people, and it works. And, you know, if this book really takes traction and gets the attention of the presidential candidates for 2016, like I hope it does, you can almost be virtually guaranteed you're going to hear the word Ebola a lot. There'll be ostrich flu or donkey flu. There'll be something that comes up that they will try to scare the public and yell anti-vaccine, no matter how reasonable the requests for safety are. If you are a critic of any aspect of vaccination, they put the millstone around your neck that you're anti-vaccine, and it's almost because they don't have an argument. All they have is name calling. Like they don't have science to support their position. They don't have the safety research is just not there to anyone who reads it. It's just not quality. It's just not.
Well, they have yet to do a double-blind placebo-controlled study using 1,000 or 2,000 or 5,000 fully vaccinated, same age cross-matched with unvaccinated and follow them for any reasonable period of time. They've never done it. That's a cardinal sin in science. And here's another...
Absolutely, Gary. And you know what else they've never done is when they talk about genetic susceptibility of people who have an autism diagnosis. They're not looking at the people who have the diagnosis. They're not taking genetic samples from they're not trying to find out who's genetically susceptible because they're just, it's really just about sales.
Well, you know, can they show one single genetic epidemic in history?
Oh, no, of course not. It's an impossibility.
It's an impossibility, yet that is their argument. Also, from your transcript, quote, "Dr. Hooker, it is, you know, they cherry-pick data. Madison 2003 is, it's so fatally flawed." Dr. Thompson, yes. Dr. Hooker, you know, with the changing diagnostic criteria, the inclusion criteria regarding clinics, the inpatient versus outpatient, I mean, it's such a mess. Dr. Thompson, no, I know. But I'm just saying, while I'm out defending a dissertation on a weekly basis, she's out in Denmark money laundering with her boyfriend. Dr. Hooker, yes, party at Thompson's house, okay. Dr. Thompson, sitting at the seaside with Dr. Thornton. Dr. Hooker, you're right, Dr. Thompson, and his Harley Davidson in his second house in Atlanta. They're talking about the man who has been quoted as definitive expert in the world on no association between vaccine and autism, and that man is now a fugitive from justice and has been for a long time. He's living in Denmark, and I want to ask any of you, Do you know if his female friend moved over there with him and still is getting research from the CDC, and yet he should have been denounced? His research should have been expunged from the record. It was fraudulent and flawed, and yet that is the argument they've been using all this time. Oh, Dr. Thornton, he did all these studies. Dr. Thornton is a fugitive from the law. Your thoughts, please.
No, I agree. And those items that Dr. Thompson mentions, those are items that were listed in the indictment. He was indicted in 2011 in Atlanta in federal court and for embezzling more than $1 million from the CDC. And I do believe the woman they're talking about is Diana Shandell, who spent 20 years or so at the CDC. I think she's now left the CDC. And I believe what Dr. Thompson is saying in the transcripts is that she is now, and I don't know how to pronounce it, Aarhus University or in Denmark. That's where she is now affiliated, which is the university that Dr. Thorsen used to be affiliated with, that, and he embezzled the $1 million through that university. So, again, I don't know, have independent knowledge of this, but Dr. Thompson seems to indicate that Dr. Thorsen and Dr. Shandell have been a couple the whole time. Since, I guess, the early 2000s and until to the present.
Okay, please hold your thoughts. Dr. Robert Sears, would you address the issue of ticks and why parents should pay careful attention to what Dr. Thompson was telling us is a smoking gun when it comes to vaccines and symptoms?
Yeah, Gary, I'd be happy to. Hey, Kevin, good to talk to you as well. So yeah, the tick finding in this research I found very, very interesting. So essentially a tick is an abnormal movement of the body. And it's kind of like a mix between a habit and a very mild seizure movement. And it's kind of very difficult to define. But some examples would be, say, shoulder shrugging, kind of like shrugging your shoulders up because you can't stop it from happening, or sort of like maybe some twitching movements of the face. Kids might have vocal tics where they kind of make strange noises uncontrollably from time to time. It's basically, it's not the same as a seizure in that it's not sort of repetitive, continued jerking, but neither is it really very controllable. Like such as a habitual movement, something that's a habit, you can kind of control it. But a tick is almost this uncontrollable urge to jerk your body in any sort of, just really brief way. It usually lasts about 1 second. And it can happen, from anywhere from 10 times a day to hundreds of times a day. It can be just a very minor annoyance, or it can be extremely debilitating. Kind of just depends on the severity of it. And in pediatrics, unfortunately, there are some areas of pediatrics where no one really knows what to do. No one really knows why something happens or how you can treat it or how you can get rid of it. And ticks have always been one of those things. Ever since I've been a pediatrician, we've had tick disorders around, but no one in pediatrics has really been able to discover what causes it or what you can do about it. Some doctors that practice in the world of complementary or integrative medicine believe that ticks might be triggered by certain viral infections or certain bacteria infections. It might be related to certain immune problems. No one really knows. There's a lot of theories. But the bottom line is tick disorders are real. They're problematic. I've seen, many, many dozens of children with tick disorders. And I've been frustrated in the lack of ability to treat it and to understand it. And so when we finally saw that this research come out from Dr. Thompson and the possible link between thimerosal and ticks, I was extremely concerned that this was allowed to go on for so long and that we continue to give thimerosal and vaccines through the flu vaccine. And I think it's time the public, hears about this and gets angry about it and holds someone accountable for it and works with us to try to remove thimerosal from all the flu vaccines so we don't have to continue to possibly have as much problem with tick disorders. I got to say, definitely, you know, thimerosal or mercury in the vaccines definitely is probably not the only cause of tick disorders. There are probably other causes as well. But when you have research that shows a clear association between thimerosal and ticks, you have to act on that information. And the fact that it was covered up is extremely concerning to me as a pediatrician.
Dr. Sears, recently there was a toxicological report that showed that the average 3-year-old child has had so many vaccines with mercury and also aluminum and other adjuvants to create a body burden of neurological toxins, that which specifically targets the neurons or the electrical circuitry or the synapses or the mitochondria, that it's over 4,000% more than what any child should ever be exposed to, and that is not a part of anyone's discussion. Also, I want you to address that. Also, in the transcript, Dr. Thompson references how the CDC looks for opportunities to begin marketing its universal vaccine agenda, and one of these was the measles outbreak that we referred to earlier. Now we have witnessed the aftermath of a rather minor outbreak, much smaller than the Ohio outbreak the previous year, and how this was manipulated and incorporated into a huge propaganda effort to win the public over the vaccine mandates, including in California. And since you're in Southern California and you've observed this unfolding almost firsthand, and you've been outspoken, and yet behind the scenes are the vaccine manufacturers, the lobbyists, and those legislators only too willing to allow no debate, no open, honest look at the scientific literature. Instead, they just voted for this. Your thoughts on these issues, please.
Yeah, you know, the toxicology issue, Gary, it is concerning to me. I certainly don't know if for sure if it's something like 4,000, you know, percent or times, you know, over what we should have. I don't know the exact numbers, and I would say that's kind of one of the main problems is we really don't know. I think my overall thought on the chemicals that are in vaccines is that, I think there certainly are some dangerous chemicals like formaldehyde and aluminum and some mercury and a whole variety of other chemicals. And I think the unfair assumption is that because these are in relatively small amounts that it should be safe. We're basically operating just assuming that these are all safe. And that's kind of the problems that I have with the vaccine industry is instead of undertaking research to demonstrate that these chemicals are safe and to prove that they're at least probably safe, they're basically just operating under the assumption that they are safe because they haven't found any reasonable research to show that they can cause a problem. They're kind of assumed safe because they have not been proven guilty or dangerous. And of course, we're seeing that some data is coming forward that shows there are problems with this. But so I do worry about the toxicity, Gary. And I mean, in my practice, I certainly do continue to offer vaccines, and some of my patients want vaccines. We do them very carefully. We do them bit by bit, very gradually. But I'd say, more than half my patients don't want vaccines because they're just worried about the unknown issues with toxicity. I think there's going to be more to learn about that in the future, and I look forward to somebody doing some better safety research on this. What you asked about the measles and the marketing and the CDC, I mean, I think you laid it out pretty accurately, and I was really just frustrated to see this go down as a PR nightmare here in California. I totally agree with you, and I think it was unfortunate that the way I look at measles is, first of all, I mean, I as a pediatrician, I actually believe in measles vaccine. The measles vaccine works pretty well. It does help protect people. Most people who are exposed to measles, if they've been vaccinated, it works very well. And our California experience, actually, to me, is evidence that we are highly vaccinated, and most people are fairly well protected, and that's why measles didn't spread around. Measles normally, if this vaccine didn't work and everyone was susceptible, measles would have spread everywhere. but the fact that it barely spread and it was quickly contained and it did not move around exponentially is, I think, testament that we have, you know, high vaccination rates. The vaccine works fairly well for a number of years in children, and it wears off, and so adults are susceptible. But even the number of adult cases was also fairly low. So the bottom line messaging is we are safe from measles as a country. We are not open to large outbreaks. There is no danger from measles. It's not a disease that's going to rampage across the countryside, killing everyone left and right. It is a mostly harmless disease for the vast majority of people that catch it, and that's also how it used to be viewed. But now that we don't understand it anymore, now that no one sees it, people tend to fear what they don't understand. So the media to say, oh no, measles is on the rampage again, and everyone, you know, runs for the hills. Whereas I think this is sort of a good testament that why it is okay to have some unvaccinated children in our communities, and it is okay to allow some families to opt out of the vaccine that they feel might not be safe for their child, because almost everyone is vaccinated. We have some pretty good, you know, immunity levels in our country, and that's why we've been able to keep measles out of our country, other than these small outbreaks, for, you know, many, many decades.
But we also
there is no fear. I think people should understand measles and respect it, but not fear it, and be more understanding to these families that don't feel like they want to risk the side effects of the vaccine for their child.
I appreciate those insights. Of course, just the opposite is happening. The Bill Gates Foundation, we have discovered, and others are on a rip of going after anyone who challenges it, doctors, scientists, it doesn't matter, or advocates. And historically, if you got the vaccine, if you got measles, you were vaccinated for life. And also the idea that a mother's milk also helps stimulate natural immunity. The first vaccine for measles was over 98% gone before the vaccine occurred. So we have done a lot. In fact, I just finished writing with Richard Gale, our scholar in residence, a major paper on vaccine smallpox and polio to give a different historical analysis. Anyhow, I appreciate your insight. Professor Mary Holland, if you have anything you'd like to add to what's been discussed, please do so. And then for you, one observation, Dr. Thompson's conversations, is that the highest levels of the CDC operate as if a secret cult that doesn't permit dissension at any level. And on one occasion, Dr. Thompson describes former CDC Director Julie Gerberding, quote, as dark. He describes calls the CDC fraud and vile. And also, it was during her watch, Dr. Gerberding's watch, before she resigned to take charge of Merck's vaccine division, that some of the most corrupt activity was conducted in order to mask the CDC's original Verstaten findings that thimerosal, mercury, contributed autism, which led to the Simpsonwood meeting, the secret meeting, to try to cover it up. Would you address these, please?
Yes, thank you. I think reading these transcripts is a must for people who are interested in the vaccine controversy. I think it does give us an impression of rampant corruption in the Centers for Disease Control. I think we imagine that these are scientists who are somehow insulated from politics and insulated from greed, and reading this makes it very clear that they're insulated from neither. They're really, as Robert F. Kennedy, who's been very outspoken on this issue lately, has called it, the CDC seems to be a cesspool of corruption. That's certainly the impression we get from this transcript. I think it's very important legally to remember, Gary, that not only are vaccines the only medical product that are compelled by states across the country, but that since 1986, Congress has given virtually blanket liability protection to vaccine manufacturers. So we have this terrible recipe of compulsion plus indemnification, and it's truly a recipe for disaster. And that's what I think is so destructive. And I think what's happened in California is very troubling, And it is possible that that could happen elsewhere in the country. So it's very important for people who care about this issue to get these transcripts into the hands of legislators and have them read this themselves. We don't know if Thompson's telling the truth here. We really don't. But that's all the more reason to get him into Congress and to get him to give testimony in a hearing about vaccine safety and about the vaccine program.
When you were on Democracy Now! With Paul Offit, and I heard the discussion, quite frankly, I was appalled. And I'll tell you why I was appalled. You're aware of the vaccines that Offit created, or his company. You're aware of how much money it was sold for, allegedly around $141 million. How much that personally got is a controlling factor in the company, I don't know. But also, how many deaths, baby deaths, were attributed to the vaccine? And do you remember?
I don't know the exact number, but it's the rotavirus vaccine, and certainly there have been many episodes of intussusception and also deaths that have been attributed to the vaccine.
I read 304. So my first question would have been, why are you on this program talking as an expert in vaccine safety if anything you were affiliated with caused such injury or death? How does that make a person an expert? And giving people assurances that a particular vaccine. Now, that's my personal opinion. Also, I believe that if people are going to debate, they should debate one-on-one, face-to-face, so the audience has an opportunity to listen to both sides and sees whether or not either one or both make any sense and not be in any way staged or controlled. Now, if you were right now, you had Dr. Paul Offit in front of you, what would be one or two salient questions that you would ask him that members of Congress and the media never ask him?
If the vaccines are as safe and effective as you say they are, why is any compulsion necessary whatsoever? That'd be my first question. If they're so great, if they're as important to public health as refrigerators are, which are incredibly important, or toilets, people will take them. There's no need for compulsion. So I would ask him about that. I would ask him, as you have, I would ask him about his conflicts of interest. Congress and the media never seem to ask him about his conflicts of interest. And that would be number one. I would ask, why is the pharmaceutical community now branding Dr. Thompson, who spent his life working on vaccines, why are they branding him anti-vaccine? Is it the case that anyone who asks any question about vaccines at all has to be labeled anti-vaccine? And if that's true, then their perspective doesn't seem to be one rooted in science. It seems to be one rooted in fundamentalism. So those are some of the things. I also would ask him, how can he really, if Dr. Thompson has disavowed the credibility of his own work, how can Dr. Offit still continue to suggest that it's important work? On the back of this book, Gary, Dr. Offit is quoted as saying, you know, I think Bill Thompson's work is a wonderful study. I think it stands as the definitive study. So I would ask him, does he still think that it stands as a definitive study when Dr. Thompson alleges that there's been fraud? I would have many questions for Dr. Offit.
I would have just one at this point. I would say, Dr. Offit, did you state at any time that you felt vaccines were so safe for children that they could easily take 10,000 of them in a single time? And if he said, yes, I said that, then I would say, then, sir, would you show good faith by allowing medical doctors to give you 10,000 vaccines at one time?
Well, that's a great question, Gary, and certainly he is. He did say that. So I agree with you. That would be an excellent question. Might be the last one.
Yeah. Now, Mary, after we look and review everything Dr. Thompson has brought forth and consider the level of corruption at the CDC, we also must realize, unfortunately, that we cannot sue the CDC. However, our CDC leaders, such as Colleen Boyle and other high-level officers, subject to individual lawsuits, and what are the legal options the public has available? And in your estimation, as a professor of law, can a case be made that the CDC, by manipulating its science to hide evidence of vaccines' risks, has been conducting a huge human experiment on children that violates international laws against medical experimentation?
Well, you're certainly right, Gary, that one of the fundamental premises of international human rights since World War II is the prohibition against using human subjects for experiments without their consent. I've looked at that question of whether or not we could characterize this as a great experiment, and while I think it's appealing as a kind of way to understand this, and it's appealing on a rhetorical level, I'm not sure that that would be the best way to attack this in courts of law. I do think that what Dr. Thompson has alleged requires greater investigation, but certainly what he alleges could be, for sure, is criminal behavior. It's obstruction of justice, it's destruction of evidence, things that they did knowing that they had committed crimes in order to further cover them up. So I think he certainly makes allegations in these transcripts that bear out significant further investigation. I think there's also questions here. He certainly raises questions about the level of fraud, not just about fraud within the government, but I think there's another lawsuit that's going on right now in Pennsylvania that raises questions about what industry knew in terms of fraud. There's questions about whether they knew that the MMR vaccine itself was ineffective. And then a terrific film, Gary, that many of your listeners may be interested in is called Trace Amounts, that specifically looks at the issue of thimerosal in vaccines. And there seems to be guilty knowledge within the CDC and within industry as well that mercury is causing significant collateral damage to generations of children. So I certainly think these are the basis for looking at fraud, civil fraud with damages, and I think it's the basis for looking at criminal actions as well.
I'd like to share another quote from Dr. Thompson. And again, people will be able to read these in depth in an outstanding, brand new, just today released important book, Vaccine Whistleblower, Exposing Autism Research Fraud at the CDC. Dr. Thompson, quote, "If I were forced to testify or anything like that, I'm not going to lie, but I don't want to say things to you right now that aren't in some written form. I want to be very careful about that. I'll say if I'm forced, if it comes through some legitimate channels, if I'm forced to answer questions, I'm not going to lie. I basically have stopped lying," end quote. Quote, Dr. Thompson, here's what I shoulder. "I shoulder that the CDC has put the research 10 years behind because the CDC has not been transparent. We've missed 10 years of research because the CDC is so paralyzed right now with anything released to autism, related autism. They're not doing what they should be doing because they're afraid to look for things that might be associated. So anyway, there is still a lot of shame with that. So when I talk to a person like you, who has to live this day in and out, I say, well, so I have to deal with a few months of hell. If all this becomes public, no big deal. I'm not having to deal with a child who is suffering day in and day out. So that's the way I view it, all this. I'm completely ashamed of what I did," end quote. I want to share a final thought here. I believe that we should carefully and meticulously do our research with the great legal minds that two right now on the program have, because you are familiar with the government and how it operates, Professor Mary Holland and Kevin Berry. I believe that we can do something else that even is more important initially. I believe that each one of the people mentioned in the transcripts, we should confront them in a polite but strict manner and say, here are the allegations or that have been made, and then their positions at the CDC, and then stage demonstrations, the March for Truth about vaccines with all the different advocacy groups, pro or anti-vaccine is really secondary. It's just that they've had damaged children, and go to the CDC headquarters, go to the FDA headquarters, go to the White House with posters, with these people's pictures, their title at the CDC, and what they are alleged to have done or participated in, and go clear back to Simpsonwood. Every participant in Simpsonwood. I also believe we should go outside of Merck and every manufacturer of vitamins, or excuse me, every manufacturer of vaccines in the country that has been shown that vaccine to be problematic and do demonstrations there. That will draw the national media. When you create a news media environment, the media is forced to cover it. And then suddenly, for the first time, instead of you being on the defensive, they are on the defensive and then demand of the presidential candidates that they sit with 10 individuals. And I can give you those 10 individuals, all scholars, all have spent at least 6,000 to 10,000 hours researching vaccine safety and efficacy, including toxicologists, immunologists, virologists, and medical doctors, all independent and all originally pro-vaccine. None pro-vaccine today, and let these candidates hear from a panel. In the absence of that, I will film all these people being asked just two questions. That's it. Are vaccines safe and are they effective? And let their answers and the supporting documentation shown on the right-hand side of the screen, every article from peer-reviewed literature on every aspect of vaccine safety and efficacy and history, roll down and be shown so that the candidates, the American public, and the American media, and then send every single member of the American media a copy of that, and every major scientific organization, including one I'm ashamed of at this time, the National Library of Medicine, the National Academy of Science, for not being more open and objective. But the scientists in there affiliated with the pharmaceutical industry are rampant. And then send every employee of the federal government, the CDC, and every FDA the same information and say, now, do you still hold the position that we should not hold independent open hearings and debate this issue? Those are my final thoughts. Real quick. One, we're out of time, but I want to get your final thoughts in very quickly. Kevin, we start with you.
Thank you. I like that idea, Gary. But I also I think it's very important. We have a presidential election coming up this year. We already have without presidential leadership, which has been sorely lacking on vaccine safety every president since Ronald Reagan has been not taking vaccine safety seriously. We need the next one to make it a priority. Because the entire vaccine program is under the executive branch. The next president has to appoint an HHS secretary and a CDC director and an FDA director and an NIH director who's going to take it seriously. And they would also have, in order to have an honest investigation of any of the criminal actions, they'd also have to appoint an attorney general and a president would have to say to an attorney general, I want you to look at this, because the policy comes directly out of the White House, which is why the White House is on the cover of Vaccine Whistleblower.
Thank you. And Dr. Robert Sears, your final quick thought.
Yeah, you didn't ask me, Gary, what question I would ask Dr. Paul Offit if I had the chance. And my question in a nutshell would be this. The vaccine you created for rotavirus causes an extreme intestinal blockage, which is a life-threatening surgical emergency, in 1 in 20,000 babies who get the vaccine, according to Centers for Disease Control website. That's 1 in 20,000 babies suffer this severe intestinal reaction that threatens their life. And how, why are you not working hard to minimize that reaction? Why is that vaccine still on the market when there's such a considerable reaction? That would cause that severe reaction in as many as 250 babies each year in our country. If so many babies are having a severe reaction, and then rotavirus as a disease, it was only fatal to about 40 babies each year in our country. To me, those numbers just don't add up. And so I'd like to hear what Dr. Offit has to say about that.
All right.
And why that vaccine is still on the market.
Listen, Professor Mary Holland, final thought real quick, please.
This is a global issue, Gary, and I'm very happy to say that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and the director of the film, Trace Amounts, Eric Gladden, will be speaking tomorrow at the United Nations. And I think it's fantastic that at least the global community and you, of course, but are taking this issue as seriously as it demands.
I want to thank Kevin Berry, Professor Mary Holland, and Dr. Robert Sears for being with us today on our special vaccine discussion, the CDC, William Thompson transcripts, and the truth. Thank you all. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening.